Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is part two of our clinical focus on fatty liver disease. In part one, we talked about the extent of the problem, how can you know if you have fatty liver disease, and we began talking about some measures you can take to protect your liver. And in part two, we're going to continue talking about ways to protect your liver, ways to reverse fatty liver disease, and also certain supplements that have been documented to be either helpful or in some cases harmful for fatty liver disease. So let's start with some avoidances. By the way, I wrote an article, which is a companion article to this clinical focus that summarizes some of these points. 21 ways to save your liver. You can find it at drhoffman.com on our webpage. So one of the most important things to tell a patient who has non-alcoholic liver disease is to, even though it's non-alcoholic, is to avoid alcohol, because it's not uncommon to see a synergy between fatty liver disease that's induced by diet and obesity and a little bit too much alcohol. That's a deadly combination. Now, that you also tell patients who have infectious hepatitis, hepatitis B or hepatitis C, that's chronic. You know, generally, it's okay to consume a little alcohol, but you got liver disease, don't touch any alcohol. Alcohol requires a healthy liver to be properly metabolized, and so I recommend zero tolerance for drinks, and especially in women who naturally have a little lower tolerance for alcohol. More about that in just a moment. You also need to avoid certain supplements. You know, generally, you can go in a health food store, and even if you're not that savvy, it's hard to inflict grievous bodily harm on yourself. But there are a couple of circumstances, medical conditions, where certain supplements can be harmful, and liver disease is one of them. So excess iron can be a problem. There are some people who already have a propensity to absorb iron to a high degree. They have iron overload in their system. It's not even a matter of excess dietary iron. They just, their bodies just hoard iron. And excess iron promotes free radical damage throughout the body, but it's particularly harmful to the liver. People with a condition of hemochromatosis can develop liver damage and cirrhosis just on the basis of that hereditary condition. So normal people can probably tolerate iron to a greater degree, but if your liver is already weak and damaged and laden with fat, which promotes inflammation, you don't want to add iron. That's like adding lighter fluid to the fire. So make sure your multis don't have iron. Don't take iron supplements on the theory that, like Geritol, that's going to make you have more energy. It's generally not helpful if you've got fatty liver disease, unless your doctor tells you specifically that you're anemic and you're entitled to take some iron. Also, niacin is a popular supplement for lowering cholesterol. And even if you don't have fatty liver disease, you can damage your liver with niacin. There was a guy named Dr. Kowalski who wrote a book, I believe it was in the late 1980s, sort of a beginning of my medical career, called The 8-Week Cholesterol Cure. This is when cholesterol suddenly became in vogue and everybody was worried about lowering cholesterol. It was before statin drugs. And he suggested that people take niacin in his book. Well, it worked for a lot of people, but for a couple of dozen people, it resulted in severe liver damage, and he was sued. And probably damages were awarded to the people who took niacin unsupervised. I've seen niacin create elevations in people's liver enzymes with a dosage as low as 500 once or twice daily. And generally, niacin's well tolerated, but if you've got fatty liver disease or predisposition to problems in your liver, niacin is not the way to go. And even the amount of niacin that is in a potent B complex, like a B100 complex pill, might be more niacin than your body can handle. Vitamin A can also be problematic to the liver, and not so much the beta carotene or the mixed carotenoids. there's really two forms of vitamin A. There's what's called the preformed vitamin A, which is retinol or retinal palmitate, and that can overaccumulate in the liver. So the liver tends to store vitamin A, but excess vitamin A can be damaging. Also, other fat-soluble vitamins, I mean, potentially, it would be hard to do this, but at least theoretically, very, very high doses of vitamin D could be harmful to the liver. I have not seen that to the extent I've seen it with the other supplements. So check your multi and B-complex for these ingredients. Now, there was recently a piece that was a study that was widely reported in the press that suggests that dietary supplements are a major cause of liver injury and the need for transplantation and even deaths in the United States. And I'm going to comment on it via the very, very excellent rebuttal written by one of my good colleagues, Bill Sardi, who's actually a great investigative reporter on the health front and a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine. He's been a guest recently several times. And this is entitled, Yet Another Unjustified Hit Piece on Dietary Supplements. I think you can find the full text at his website. Bill Sardi is spelled S-A-R-D-I, and he has a Knowledge of Health website, which is very informative. The headlines that actually just this month that came out include this lurid one from consumeraffairs.com. Supplements now more likely than medications to cause death. Well, that's a ridiculous contention because medications are a major, major cause of liver injury in this country. And while supplements can occasionally cause liver problems, that is very, very infrequent. And so I'm going to base my critique of that on some of Bill Sardi's comments. There was no way of knowing in this study whether the users of these supplements who developed liver problems were taking them in the doses recommended on the label, or even whether they intentionally overdosed. Sometimes people taking certain, like, weight loss products, they think if a little is good, a lot is better. The comparison was unfair because they say that that herbal medications and supplements and bodybuilding supplements have caused more havoc than drugs. That's absurd. They conveniently excluded from their analysis Tylenol, acetaminophen, which is it's present in just overall, you know, just over-the-counter Tylenol, but it's also present in many cold remedies and various types of combo drugs that you can buy over-the-counter. And this is a pain reliever that's been linked by a public interest group called ProPublica to more deaths, hospitalizations, and liver transplants than any over-the-counter medication. ProPublica estimates that deaths from accidental or intentional misuse of acetaminophen were responsible in 2010, the last year recorded, for 78,000 visits to the emergency room and 33,000 hospitalizations. So, you know, clearly, you can't hold a candle with supplements. All right, so what they did is they found a certain number and it, by no means, this is a comprehensive survey of all the injuries caused by supplements or drugs, and it doesn't claim to be, but it was inflated into a headline that indicts the supplement industry. They found that a high percentage of the subjects taking these supposedly tainted supplements were alcohol abusers. 54% of this group were consuming excess alcohol. So that could render them more susceptible to problems from supplements, but also they could have just had fatty liver. No, there was no accounting for that. You know, were they obese? Were they thin? Were they metabolic syndrome? Do they have pre-existing liver disease? And by the way, 54% of them, over half, were alcohol abusers. Among the supplements that created problems, many of them were these exotic bodybuilding supplements that I don't recommend. I suggest that you should avoid exotic-sounding bodybuilding ingredients and shoddily manufactured herbal products, especially if they've got like Chinese writing on them and you have no idea what's in them, or if a product doesn't disclose precisely what's in there. Properly manufactured products actually have a very clear-cut declaration of the ingredients, and you can see what's there. One of the things that I suggest is, if you're concerned about a supplement and its quality or its safety, go to the Emerson website. They have something called the Emerson Quality Program. Full disclosure, I'm part of the Emerson Professional Advisory Committee. There's a group of health professionals that are advisors to this distributor of supplements. It's a large distributor, not so much to the general public, but more to health practitioners. And they have established their own internal quality control program where they review product ingredients for safety and if they've adhered to good manufacturing processes or GMPs, practices, excuse me. GMP stands for Good Manufacturing Practices, which involve testing and standards of cleanliness and purity and proper sourcing. There was a product called OxyElite Pro that created a scandal earlier this year. There were 97 cases of hepatitis. 47 of them were hospitalized. There was one death. And this is just kind of a very weird case of a over-ambitious bodybuilding product that purported to help people lose weight. And often people who were trying to lose weight, I mean, sometimes athletes who took it at the proper level got some benefit. But when something has the cachet of a weight loss supplement, this is a class of dietary supplements that tends to be overdosed by crash dieters. And then, you know, dieters put stress on their bodies. And so they were cases of liver toxicity. A fairly high percentage of the products that were indicted as unsafe in the Hepatology Journal article were foreign made or were simply raw unlabeled Chinese herbs. And that concerns me. You know, unless you receive an herbal formula from a reputable credentialed, licensed herbal professional or traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, I don't recommend that you take products that are just, a bunch of herbs that are thrown into a jar or that have Chinese writing on them. I think that could be a problem. There was also a couple of cases of people using multiple colon cleansing products. There were several cases of people using herbal products to boost sexual performance, which I don't really recommend. I think these natural aphrodisiacs are sometimes laced with actual prescription meds. Some of them are okay, but particularly ones that are kind of fly-by-night products can be unsafe. So bottom line, I feel that the claims of that supplements are dangerous for the liver are exaggerated and belie the excellent safety profile of the vast majority of supplements made by mainstream responsible manufacturers. There are some bad players who exist on the fringes of the supplement industry, and the FDA is sometimes looking out for shoddily manufactured or products containing illicit or banned ingredients. And if you stick to the right manufacturers, I don't think you're going to run into a problem. So enough said on that subject. Another potential area of harm is oral hormones. And when I prescribe bioidentical hormones for men and women, I look to underlying liver disease as a potential problem. And if that's going on, I use transdermal products. By the way, I never use oral testosterone. Oral testosterone can be toxic to the liver. And so I always use transdermal testosterone for men, or sometimes, very occasionally, testosterone injections. For women, taking the birth control pill and drugs like Premarin, which is a phony estrogen, artificial estrogen used for menopause, or Prempro, that does place stress on the liver. So I would avoid those. Certainly anabolic steroids for bodybuilding, those can have a harmful effect on the liver. Okay, now there are many, many drugs that can be harmful. Number one, of course, is Tylenol. You can actually create severe liver damage with even the normally prescribed doses of Tylenol, especially if you're sick and you don't eat. Your liver is deprived of glutathione, and glutathione is essential to keep the liver healthy. Tylenol rapidly depletes it. By the way, the best and foremost and most commonly used antidote to Tylenol poisoning, somebody shows up in the emergency room and maybe they took a bottle of Tylenol in an effort to kill themselves, they're given something called N-acetylcysteine. You'll recognize that as an over-the-counter supplement that we often recommend. It's a potent precursor of glutathione, and literally you can save a person's life with N-acetylcysteine. So people who have fatty liver, chronic liver disease, I recommend that. Among other drugs that create liver problems, statins are notorious for causing liver problems. Acid blockers like Prilosec, Prevacid, Zegerid, Nexium. Many psychiatric drugs, including the SSRI medications, sometimes but not always. Certain antibiotics, and particularly antifungal medications, they're notorious for causing liver problems. So you can imagine, you know, what if a person has taken 3, 4, 5 different drugs? The liver is responsible for detoxifying drugs. And so if you're taking a lot of drugs, your liver is working overtime already. And then you may add the effects of intestinal toxicity or excess caloric burden to your liver's job to detoxify, and then you can develop fatty liver. So other things that are helpful, milk thistle, silymarin, which is derived from the milk thistle plant, has been used for centuries as a natural remedy for diseases of the liver and biliary tract. We always give it to our patients who are under liver stress. A caution about milk thistle is that it will change the metabolism of certain prescription drugs. So check with your doctor or pharmacist lest you neutralize. Usually what it does is it weakens medications you're taking. So, you know, sometimes you go to the health food store and you say, look, I'm taking a lot of medication. I'm concerned about toxicity in my liver. So the helpful person behind the counter will say, well, here, milk thistle. And they know that is a detoxifier. It does protect the liver. The only problem is it will actually affect blood levels of the medications you're taking. So that could sometimes result in less effective action of some medications. That's the only concern with milk thistle. It's generally safe to take, but it can interfere with the action of certain medications. SAMe, S-adenosyl methionine, acts in a variety of ways to protect the liver from injury. And so you can take 400 milligrams twice daily to promote detoxification. I often give it. Phosphatidylcholine. Well, they've done some experiments with baboons in which they give baboons a choice of either beer or water to drink in their cages. And the baboons, just like humans, this is basic primate behavior, will always gravitate towards the beer. They'll drink and drink and drink the beer until they develop cirrhosis. This is actually one of the ways that they discover that they investigate liver disease is by deliberately inducing cirrhosis in experimental animals, and baboons are close to humans. There was a guy named Lieber when I was a medical student who did research with baboons on cirrhosis, and he found that by feeding the baboons concentrated lecithin, rich in something called PC or phosphatidylcholine, that there was protection of the liver against the adverse effects of alcohol. He helped to forestall liver damage and cirrhosis by feeding them large amounts of phosphatidylcholine. And so that's part of our regimen. It does seem to protect the liver. Also consider alpha-lipoic acid. Alpha-lipoic acid, its effect on the liver was popularized by Dr. Bert Berkson, B-E-R-K-S-O-N. I've interviewed him here on Intelligent Medicine Podcast several times. It has liver protective effects. And the story goes that when Dr. Berkson was a medical intern, he was working at a hospital in his home state of New Mexico, and people were out picking wild mushrooms. And it's very easy to sometimes pick up poisonous mushrooms because they look identical to normal ones. You have to really be an expert to decide. So don't go picking wild mushrooms and then decide to eat them without being an expert in identifying them. Well, literally, these death angel mushrooms can kill you by destroying your liver. And at the time that he was taking care of these patients, there was no known antidote to the death angel mushroom. So he was assigned the task of basically keeping these patients comfortable while they died. And he did some, you know, he was a medical student. He was idealistic. He went to the medical library and started burning the midnight oil, doing research to figure out how he could save his patients. He was conscientious, and he wasn't just going to let him go. Usually you're low man on the totem pole of a medical team, and they said, okay, just let this intern keep these patients comfortable because there's nothing the rest of us can do. But he came up with a treatment based on German research, alpha-lipoic acid. He obtained some of this, gave it to the patients, saved their lives. And so we now recognize the potential of either oral alpha-lipoic acid or in more extreme cases, intravenous alpha-lipoic acid to help patients recover. The reason alpha-lipoic acid seems to be so good for the liver, it's a very potent antioxidant. Vitamin E. Studies have shown that patients with fatty liver disease had considerable improvement in the appearance of liver tissue on biopsies after taking just 800 international units of vitamin E over a period of months. Vitamin C. In one study, when teamed with vitamin E, just 500 milligrams a day of vitamin C slowed the progression of fatty liver. Curcumin. Curcumin is a potent extract of the spice turmeric. And fatty liver is at least in part an inflammatory disorder. So curcumin seems to have protective effects. There's actually several articles, scientific articles, that show that it protects the liver. Drink dandelion tea. That's easy. You can go to a health food store and obtain dandelion tea. Dandelion tea is a traditional remedy for liver disorders. It's a what is called cholagogue. That's an old-fashioned herbal medicine term, dates back to the 19th century, which means that it promotes mobilization of stagnant bile from the liver, and it really helps. Avoid constipation. The lack of adequate bowel elimination allows intestinal toxins to accumulate. And remember, I told you that the intestine is connected to the liver via superhighway, the portal vein. So all those toxins that accumulate in the intestine and you're not moving your bowels, they will go directly up via the portal vein and flood the liver. And so moving your bowels is part of the way to protect your liver. You actually have to have healthy elimination via the gastrointestinal tract to keep your liver healthy. And get moving. Our final recommendation. According to recent studies, regular aerobic exercise helps to optimize liver function. It may do so by curbing insulin resistance, which is a key promoter of fatty deposits in the liver. We talked about that in part one. But I have here in front of me the latest edition of the New England Journal of Medicine. And there's a simple explanation for why exercise helps the liver. Even in healthy young persons, insulin resistance in muscle promotes deposition of fat in the wrong places in your belly, but also in your liver, because it changes the way that carbohydrates that we take in our food are utilized. The healthy way that carbohydrates are utilized for fuel by our muscles is they get deposited as glycogen. Okay, glycogen is a storage form of energy in the muscles. And if you're not exercising, if you're sedentary, there's more of a tendency for your ingested carbohydrates to go to the liver and to turn into fat. And that results in increased plasma triglyceride concentrations and lower levels of HDL cholesterol. Now, what's interesting is that just one bout of exercise, a single bout of moderate intensity exercise with the use of an elliptical trainer, that's pretty easy, completely reverses the tendency for carbohydrates to be stored as fat in the liver as opposed to being stored as glycogen, as a fuel supply in the muscle. So the use of an elliptical trainer just one time in an experiment conducted here that's described in the New England Journal promotes muscle glycogen synthesis after carbohydrate ingestion. And so that's what you want to do. Single 45-minute bout of moderate intensity exercise with the use of an elliptical trainer. So that's a pretty convincing demonstration of how exercise can alter the way in which your body burns carbohydrates. Of course, you can go on a lower carbohydrate diet to begin with. That's a good idea. But even if you're ingesting carbohydrates, the exercise will render the carbohydrates less harmful to your liver, but also improve your lipid profile, lowering your triglycerides and raising your HDL. So that's pretty cool. All right, so those are a variety of ways that you can save the liver, as Dan Aykroyd, channeling Julia Child, exclaims in a YouTube video from Saturday Night Live, vintage late 1980s, early 90s, I'm not sure which, but we all grew up with that. It's part of our cultural heritage. Saving the liver is important, and I hope I've given you some guideposts on how you can prevent yourself or a loved one from acquiring this very, very prevalent problem. Fatty liver disease is epidemic in America, and it creates a lot of havoc. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.